Hello, friends, and welcome to this episode of the Clone Conspiracy Podcast, the show where we try to get to the bottom of just what the hell was going on with Spider-Man comics in the mid-90s. I'm your host and guide, Scott Free, and I want to thank you again for the monumental mistake of joining me on this journey through one of the most infamous stories and periods in Marvel Comics history, the Clone Saga, and, of course, the story of Spider-Man's clone, Ben Reilly. In our last episode, we discussed the death of Gwen Stacy in the original Green Goblin, in Amazing Spider-Man 121 and 122, in June and July of 1973. R.I.P. Gwen, gone but not forgotten, and a big fuck you to Norman Osborn. Now, the remainder of 1973 sees Spider-Man face off with an early appearance Luke Cage in Amazing Spider-Man 123, the introduction of the Man-Wolf, who is J. Jonah Jameson's werewolf astronaut son, and that is a genuinely insane sentence to say out loud, in issue 124 and 125, a battle with Z-list Australian supervillain the Kangaroo in ASM 126, and a short Vulture arc in ASM 127 and 128. This is all Jerry Conway, and it's fun. It's a really fun chunk of Spider-Man stories where you can tell that Conway is really enjoying himself, and Peter in this era grapples with his guilt after Gwen's death, and he's slowly starting to get close to Mary Jane. It's really well done. And as we're going through this, it's when we start to approach the proper kickoff of the first Clone Saga. Issue 129 of Amazing Spider-Man in late 1973 is where the first Clone Saga proper kicks off. This is, again, an issue by Conway with Ross Andrew on pencils and Dave Hunt and Frank Giochia on inks. This issue is iconic. It introduces two characters who are important to the Spider-Man mythos and, for one of them, to the broader Marvel mythos, and that is Frank Castle, the Punisher, and the Jackal. It's one of the most famous Spider-Man covers of the 1970s. You probably know the one that I'm talking about. It's a yellow background with the Punisher aiming at Spider-Man through the sights of a sniper rifle. It's really iconic. This is one that's heavily collected. It's heavily reprinted. It's always very funny to me when the story pops up in reprints or the trades because it occurs in the midst of all this Jackal business in the wake of the death of Gwen Stacy. And if you don't have the context for what's going on, it's just the Punisher being hired by this little freak that you've never seen before to kill Spider-Man. And that is essentially a summary of this issue. It opens dramatically with Punisher shooting at a plaster statue of Spider-Man while this leering, green-skinned Nosferatu-like guy cheers him on. This is the Jackal. The Jackal, referenced before, is complicated. We're going to talk about the Jackal a lot. Too much. You are going to be sick of the Jackal as we go further and further into this podcast. But for now, in his first appearance as the Jackal, all you need to know is that he hates Spider-Man, and he seems to have convinced the Punisher that the Punisher needs to kill Spidey. Now, this is the Punisher's first appearance. This is a very early Punisher. We don't get any of Frank's backstory in this issue. As near as we can tell, he is a man who has sworn a vendetta against crime. He uses lethal methods. The broad strokes of the later Punisher are there, but we don't get his traumatic backstory or any of that. All we get is that he's there to kill Spider-Man, who he views as a villain. Now, Peter shows up at the offices of the Bugle, as you do, and this is a really great sequence. Andrew, on the art, really captures Peter's angst and depression over Gwen's death and Harry's state. We see Peter swinging towards the Bugle, and he has a whole sort of inner monologue about his turmoil in the wake of Gwen's death. when he lands on the roof, there's a great three-panel sequence where, after he's changed back into his Peter Parker guise, he sort of forces himself to put on a happy face, and you see sort of this sequence where Peter sort of forces on a smile and points at his face, you know, almost like he's putting on a mask. And he dismisses it then, goes with, "Aw, the heck with it. Why does Peter Parker always have to be cheerful anyway?" Before sort of waving his hand dismissively and storming down the stairs off the roof into the Bugle proper. And it's a really powerful sequence. When Peter gets down there, Jonah, not impressed with the photos of Spider-Man that Peter has brought, even though that tends to be what Jonah wants most of the time, the hot new villain in New York is the Punisher. And Jonah sends Peter out on the trail of the Punisher, demanding pictures of the Punisher. There's a newspaper from one of their rivals, the New York Star, that shows the Punisher shooting somebody down and says, "Punisher declares war on organized crime." Peter goes out. Unsurprisingly, since this is a comic book, Spider-Man runs into the Punisher a few pages later. They fight. They fight. They fight. Again, this is Frank's first appearance, and his backstory really doesn't exist yet. All we get is that he's a guy who really fucking hates crime, and he thinks Spider-Man is a menace. He monologues a lot of this at him during the fight. They fight, and they yell at each other about morality, and then the Jackal leaps out of nowhere, haven't seen him, and claws Peter with his, quote, "negatively charged electro prod claws." This disorients Peter. He falls off the roof, which Frank is really pissed about, because he says that's not really like an honorable way to die. He wanted to kill him man to man. The Jackal and the Punisher escape. And, you know, this is, I gotta say, one of the Jackal's signature moves. This bitch just loves to pop up out of nowhere and claw you. The only thing he loves more than clawing people is stealing their DNA, and he really fucking loves clawing people. You know, you're waiting around, boom, Jackal comes out of nowhere, he's gonna claw you in the back of the head. Like, that's his signature move, that's his finisher, that's how he starts fights, that's just what he does. You're dealing with the Jackal, you are probably gonna get clawed in the head at some point. We then, as this issue goes on, we get a sequence with Professor Miles Warren, Peter, and the late Gwen Stacy, their biochemistry professor. We get a sequence with Professor Warren asking MJ if she's seen Peter. MJ, meanwhile, is having an internal narration about whether she wants to get involved with Peter. It's a fun sequence. It's followed then suddenly by a smash cut to the Punisher just backhanding the crap out of the Jackal. Also very fun, because there's nothing more satisfying than seeing the Jackal just get slapped around. Punisher is pissed that the Jackal ambushed Spider-Man. As I said, he wanted to face him sort of mano a mano. And Frank, who is drawn kind of like a busted Charles Bronson impersonator who forgot to put on the mustache, is beginning to suspect that the sort of freaky Green Nosferatu guy might not be on the up and up. Conveniently, a couple pages later, Spidey and Punisher run into each other again, as Frank is trying to repair some guns. He goes to the guy that he got the guns from originally. Spidey has been led there by various clues. They fight, and Frank, finding the dead gunsmith, notices that the guy has been killed with claws. Frank, you know, not the sharpest tool in this story, finally realizes that the Jackal is in fact a piece of shit. Like, way to go, Frank. Took you like 20 pages to figure this out. Spidey and the Punisher sort of end on tense grounds, but they go their separate ways. And that's really the first introduction of the Punisher. He's introduced as a sort of dupe henchman for the Jackal, who is he's portrayed in an interesting light in this arc. He is not necessarily portrayed negatively. You know, I made reference before to Charles Bronson and the Death Wish movies. This is the era of 1973 of movies like Dirty Harry and Death Wish, where there's a lot of emphasis on these films where law and order is broken down and guys are coming out of the woodwork, whether former cops, former soldiers, to sort of violently restore law and order. So you do see the kind of framework of the later Punisher there. At the same time, he's drawn much older, and he's both a little cheerier in this iteration, but also has no qualms about trying to kill Spider-Man. Issue 129, again, Conway and Andrew, sets the stage for a recurring beat through the next sort of 2 years of issues. Short two-issue arcs where the Jackal acts as a shadowy benefactor and ally to an assortment of Spider-Man villains. For example, in issue 130 and 131, it's Hammerhead. We get an early sequence in issue 130 with the Jackal meeting with Hammerhead. Mob boss has a big head, uses his head, which has adamantium plating, to ram people. It's funny. Hammerhead's sort of a goon. He's a mafia-based villain. Doc Ock gets dragged into the story. It's a fun two-issue arc. It's very insane. I can't emphasize how insane this story is. As Doc Ock gets dragged in a very convoluted plot, he's trying to marry Aunt May, because May has learned that she's inherited a Canadian nuclear power plant and uranium refining facility up on the Canadian-New York border. Don't worry about it. They fight. There's what might be a nuclear explosion up on the Canadian border. Hammerhead and Doc Ock are seemingly killed. They're not, but they get better. It's crazy. It's fun. Also, really just want to emphasize that Ross Andrew is absolutely killing the art throughout these mini arcs. Peter, MJ, Flash, Betty Brant in particular are just drawn absolutely beautifully. Peter, throughout this whole sort of era, wears this blue and red ski sweater with these red oxblood boots, and it's iconic. Peter Parker's red boots, iconic. It's one of his, like, really iconic early modern looks. In issue 139, a new supervillain, the Grizzly, shows up and trashes the Bugle's office. He's literally a gigantic man in a bear suit, like a grizzly bear suit. Think the Rhino, except a bear. He's been hired by Shock the Jackal to mess up the Bugle and to capture Spider-Man. They fight. Spidey wins, but then the Grizzly shows back up and captures an out-of-costume Peter, knocks him out, brings him to the Jackal. The Jackal ties Peter down to a table, they knock Peter out again, and when Peter wakes up, he's sort of dazed at a diner, and Betty and Ned Leeds are there. In issue 140, the Jackal, insisting that where Peter is, Spider-Man inevitably follows. He's strapped an armband to Peter that lets him track him. And if Peter tries to remove it, he tells Peter that the band will vibrate his arm into dust. It's not a very well thought out plan, like a lot of the Jackal's plans. There's holes in this. Peter, obviously, is Spider-Man, gets the armband off, beats the crap out of the Grizzly, and then returns to investigate the Jackal's now abandoned lab. Throughout all of this, Conway is writing these short two-issue arcs, where issue one sets up a villain, either a new villain, like the Grizzly or the Punisher, or an old villain like Hammerhead, who is instigated by the Jackal or hired by the Jackal to fight Spider-Man. Issue 141 and 142 is not a Jackal story, but it's a Mysterio story. And it does tie in to the start of the first Clone Saga. In 141, Peter has a heart-to-heart with Professor Warren, his biology professor. In the middle of 142, while out walking the streets with MJ, Peter sees a blonde woman in a white coat, a green skirt, and black boots in the distance. He totally freaks out, because that is, of course, what Gwen Stacy used to wear. He only sees her from behind. Dun dun dun. In 143, mental breakdown from a possible Gwen sighting now in the past, Peter and MJ finally kiss. Like, hard. in the middle of JFK Airport, where Peter is waiting for a flight to Paris. They're just, like, really going at it in the TWA terminal. And you know what? Good for them. Treat yourselves. Love in a Hopeless Place, all that. Issue 144, which is titled The Delusion Conspiracy, starts with Peter still in Paris. He's there for J. Jonah Jameson reasons that are not ultimately that important. He's there with Robbie Robertson. What is as important is that there's this great sequence on pages 6 and 7 of issue 144 where Aunt May is with MJ's Aunt Anna. She's generally depicted as May's best friend. And May is saying to Anna, talking about Gwen, "Oh, that poor, poor girl, to die so young. Why do the young people die, Anna, while we old women go on and on?" May says, as the pair leave Anna's apartment and step out on the snowy streets of New York. May catches sight of a woman in the distance, who we can't fully see, but the silhouette is recognizable, shall we say. May screams and falls over, and Anna rushes to her side. "I always knew it would happen, Anna. My mind. It's finally going. Promise me you'll look after Peter. Poor Peter. He's such a delicate boy," as May trails off and passes out. We smash back to Paris, where Peter is beating the hell out of some French mooks for plot reasons. Again, really don't worry about it. Jonah was kidnapped. There's a ransom thing. It's fine. Peter, Jonah, and Robbie then catch a flight back to New York once everything's settled. Anna is waiting for Peter outside of his apartment building. She says, "It's your Aunt May, Peter. She's in the hospital. She saw..." I don't know how to explain, Peter. "Upstairs, your apartment." Peter charges upstairs, throws his apartment door open, and there, dun-dun-dun, stands Gwen Stacy in the flesh. Peter says, "Gwen, you're alive?" And that concludes the issue and the seeming return of Gwen Stacy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we are in the first Clone Saga. And that, my friends, concludes episode 2 of 3 of our trip back to the 70s and to the first Clone Saga. Next episode, we finish up our jaunt to the 70s with the end of the first Clone Saga, the trip to Shea Stadium, and the first appearance of one Ben Reilly. As always, I'm Mr. Scott Free. Check me out on social media and check out the show on social media, The Clone Conspiracy. And I will see you next time.